Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, your host, and our focus is on mastering communication as an essential leadership skill so that you can command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal in any context. My guest this week is Eric Watkins. Eric is president at Abstract Marketing Group, a $70 million firm with over 500 employees. Eric won the Titan 100 Award, which honors the top 100 executives in St. Louis. He also started out as an intern at Abstract 12 years ago and worked his way up to being president. He's also the co-host of the Grow Show podcast about how to scale your business from zero to $50 million. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That intro was incredible. As a fellow podcaster, you're making me look bad with my intro on my show, for sure.
Ironic, because my job is to make you look good. I thought it sounded amazing. And now I can't wait to hear everything that you're going to tell us today. And starting with a fun fact.
Fun fact about me. Okay, so this is very embarrassing, but that's okay. That's what this is for. Like, that's what makes it fun. I was a rapper in college. I had a brief period in time where I made a couple rap songs in college. It was a dark time. These audio files are banned from existence. They cannot be found anywhere frequently.
Oh my goodness.
But I would be lying if I would say that that didn't help me in my communication today. But yeah, there's a fun fact.
Certainly in your stage presence. Now, this is so unfair because you want those files not to be found, but I'm dying to ask you to just drop a couple of measures on us.
I can't draw. I don't even remember anything at this point. It's just gone. I appreciate it though.
I'm going to have to talk to your assistant because I don't think you're telling me the truth. Somebody out there knows, has like recordings of your stuff from back in the day. So we will find it.
So funny story is real quick. My wife and I just got married this past July.
Oh, congratulations.
And she kept asking me, she knows the background and everything. And she knew a couple of my songs, whatever. And she kept asking me, like, I want you to rap at the wedding. And I was like very strong of like, I'm not doing that. At my wedding, I'm not doing that. And then I did one of the songs for her. So that was it. That was the swan song. It's done now.
Oh, so you do know one at least.
I might. Yeah.
You might. Okay. So this is my last time. Then I will stop harassing you. Can we get a couple of bars?
A couple of bars. No, not right now.
Not right now.
Maybe a different time.
Different time. Got it. So moving on from there, give us your 30-second elevator pitch. Tell us about Abstract Marketing.
So Abstract Marketing Group, as you mentioned, sales development company based out of St. Louis. We specialize in building predictable sales pipelines for our clients so they never have to worry about where their next lead comes from. And we do that by an omni-channel approach involving calls, emails, LinkedIn, and web development SEO.
Perfect. Now, what is the most important communication lesson that you had to learn and how did you learn it?
So the most important communication lesson that I've had to learn, this is going to sound very simple, but you are delivering a message to an audience and it's not how well you understand the content. It's not how much sense your presentation makes to you. It's about how it lands with the audience. This was actually a lesson I learned really early on when I had to roll out a compensation document. So a lot of you who work in sales or marketing, typically you're always finding new ways to incentivize and comp your people so they can not only make more money, but also drive higher results. And we came up with this compensation document. I loved it. I thought the people would love it because when you ran the numbers, every single person was going to make more money with the same performance that they had this year with the compensation document for next year, which is typically rare when you're rolling out a new compensation document.
Sure.
So then I presented it to the group and I just had blank stares for about 30 minutes. It ultimately turned out okay, but it was just a lesson of like, I thought they were going to love this thing. Like, but they just didn't understand it.
You were expecting to get carried out on people's shoulders for hammering.
Yeah. They're like, oh, this is awesome. Yeah. But it was too many numbers and they didn't quite do it and they're all wondering the same thing at the end of the day. Am I going to make less money with this pay plan? So if I could go back in time and do it over, that's what I would have started with. Let me just say this right up front. I ran the numbers based on all of your performance this year. And in this new pay plan, all of you would have made more money. Then talk about the pay plan. It would have been an entirely different scenario.
Absolutely. Start with the what's in it for me. Start with the why. Start with all those kinds of things. And then get into the details because they're a whole lot more incentivized to pay attention to how things work.
Yeah. What I find is you typically can't get past the fear. So when that fear goes into their head of, I'm skeptical, am I going to be making less money? They're really not listening to anything else and their mind is going to anything they can find that associates to that fear. So I think that's a really good point of just how do you lay the groundwork, and not all communication is something positive like what I'm talking about.
Right.
But just lay the groundwork and know what they're thinking, how they're feeling with the message that you're delivering, and address that.
Sure. And I think that's such an important mindset to consciously establish before you walk in there, bearing in mind, okay, who am I talking to about this? And what is their frame of reference coming into this conversation? Do they have no idea what we're going to be talking about? Are they coming in enthusiastic and hopeful? Are they coming in trepidatious? Are they coming in wait for the hammer to drop? Where are they emotionally? And what are they waiting to hear? At which point, how do you address that first? Because they're not going to hear anything else if, to your point, they're listening through fear, listening through that concern and just bracing for impact. Everything else is, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, where's the but?
Yep.
Right? You don't want anybody to be listening to you just listening for the but. Then everything else is just, you become Charlie Brown's teacher, right? Wah, 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 wah.
Exactly.
So to be able to get to first, the let me address your concerns. Let me answer the one question that's on everybody's mind. And then we'll back into all the rest of the details and fill in the blanks from there once you have your most urgent need addressed. So smart.
Yep.
So smart. Now, I like to look at different kinds of personality tests, style tests, leadership tests, those kinds of things, because I think they reveal a lot. You've taken the Enneagram. Now, tell us, what is your Enneagram type or profile or number? And what does it tell you about how it influences your communication style with others?
So I'm the 8 with a 2 wing. So I'm a challenger with a helper wing. And I remember reading this book when it came out. It's a test, but there's a book specifically around it. And it just describes, and I remember when I got to this and I just started reading, I was like, they researched me and they put me on a piece of paper. It just made a ton of sense.
Yep.
And there's two things that really stuck out to me about it. The first thing was that I actually become closer to people through conflict.
Mm.
So when I have a tough conversation with somebody, or they disagree with me and I disagree back and we go back and forth, it actually allows me to trust that person more because I feel like they're not withholding from me.
Yeah.
Our cards are out on the table and we're having great conversation.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, everybody doesn't feel that way.
Right.
And so I have a conversation, and it's me, myself, and our CEO are like this. We were actually talking about this earlier today, and we may have a tough conversation, but neither of us leave with grudges or hold hard feelings. It's just like, we had the conversation, we came to a resolution, it's gone. And what I've realized is, you know, I have certain individuals that I've managed throughout my time that they don't operate that way. And when you have one of those conversations, it lingers. So it's really important to always be asking for feedback at the end of those conversations.
So when you say we have those conversations and it lingers, what specifically lingers?
Could be anger. Could be that my words came across too harsh and feel like they're not appreciated or not valued enough. Could be that they didn't hear the 10 things I was talking about that they're doing really well. Mm. And they heard the one thing that there's some area for improvement on. And then that just replays over and over and over and over. And I think it festers, whereas like for me, it doesn't fester. So it's like conversation, good, it's gone. But that takes away from their work. That takes away from their happiness. And that's why, you know, I try to, at the end of these conversations, just simply say, hey, how are we feeling about this? Are you seeing where I'm coming from? Am I missing something? Like, I very well could be missing something. You feel like I'm off base? And allowing that safe space to have that conversation has been a really good way for me to check myself that I'm not just moving on to the next thing.
There are so many different orientations to conflict, and it's so easy to forget that not everybody views them the same way that we do. And for those who are super sensitive about not wanting to ruffle feathers and wanting to be careful and not hurt people's feelings at all, and they may dance around all sorts of stuff. And then because they're prioritizing the relationship over the, we'll call it just direct clarity of the message. And then there's people on the other side where it's just, they prioritize the clarity. And it's like, I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's just, I'm just being clear. It's not personal. It's just business. It's just whatever else. And boy, when people who are on opposite extremes of that continuum end up talking to each other, it can be quite ugly at times. So yeah, I think it's great to be able to approach and to acknowledge your own type, even as a preface to these conversations, and to just acknowledge or ask, or people are consciously aware of your intention in going into these conversations, and hopefully they'll share with you theirs as well. So everybody says, oh, you know, I prefer feedback just to be direct. And you're going, no, you don't.
Yeah, no, you don't. Yeah.
No, you don't. Like, no, you don't. Our definitions of direct may have slightly different descriptors in that old dictionary.
One thing I've found as well is it's just as important to articulate what you're not trying to do as it is what you are trying to do. So when I say this, what I am saying is A, B, C, Y, et cetera. What I'm not saying is this, because I think sometimes people assume the worst. It's part of human nature. And when you leave areas uncovered, I think that's a good way to end these conversations as well, where I can establish that safe space off the bat.
Absolutely. In the book, Crucial Conversations, I don't know if you've ever had a chance to read it, a fabulous book. I can't think of the authors, there's like five of them that all kind of wrote it together, I think. But they have a term for what they call contrasting statements. And it's exactly what you just described beyond the larger conversation, just to be able to preface things like, don't misunderstand, I don't mean X, or I don't mean to hurt your feelings, or I'm not criticizing this, or I'm not worried about X. I'm just trying to do, so it's not X, but Y is the, we'll call it the little equation for a contrasting statement. But it just helps to the extent that it can either preempt the possibility of somebody misinterpreting, or if you can sense that they're starting to go down the wrong path with it, you can put a pin in that real fast and redirect before things go south. But it's such an easy structure to use, not X, but Y, to do exactly what you're describing, is articulating what you're not trying to do, and making that as explicit as what you are trying to do, sometimes even more so.
Yeah, I probably stole it from that. I love that book. I give it to a lot of our new leaders to read. That's probably where I got it from. You read so many books and you forget where you probably didn't come up with anything by yourself. You've read it somewhere.
There's that argument that there are no new ideas, right? It's just a matter of new applications or new context or something along those lines. So now tell me about an opportunity that you missed because you held back. Why did you hold back? And if you could have a do-over, what would you say or do differently?
So I worked here for 3 years before I got my first, I would say, real promotion and moving into a sales management role. I was in operations in different roles until then. And I had never done sales at this point, but I sort of had the skill set that made leaders in the company feel like I should take this next step in my career. And initially I said no. And so I got lucky here because it ended up working out from there in my journey. But the reason I said no is because it was outside of my comfort zone. Mm. I hadn't done sales before. I was a manager at the time. I was managing one person, not a team of 10 people. I was 24 years old and I would have to manage a lot of people that are older than me and more experienced. And I was scared of the situation. But lucky enough, I had leaders around me that pushed me professionally towards it and ultimately went into it. And it was the best decision I could have made in my career. But it was a really good lesson for me early on, because I saw once I got into that position, there was a ton of growth that happened over that first year, that this isn't going to be really comfortable for you, Eric. Like, if you want to continue to advance and have new opportunities, you're never going to feel like you're 100% there or you're 100% ready.
Right.
And that helped me know. And I think that's what happens with a lot of people, where because maybe they're not as comfortable speaking in front of a group, or because they're not as comfortable managing a certain type of individual, they'll just shy away from the opportunity. And I think you just have to put yourself out there and do it scared.
Exactly. You're never totally ready for any sort of promotion or opportunity. Heck, you're never ready for parenthood. You can be excited about it. You can say you're ready for it. You're not prepared. There's nothing that prepares you 100% for any opportunity in life. Now, tell me about a time when you had to take a big risk. What was at stake? And how did you communicate your decision to key stakeholders?
One of the biggest things that comes to mind is during COVID. We were an in-person environment. We're here on the landing in St. Louis. All 500 employees pretty much are working here every single day. So when COVID hit, we had to take our whole business remote over a two-day period. And it was a huge transition for us, but we did a really good job coming together as a group, coming together by going away, but staying close together and going through that period. And then it was more of the August, September timeframe after we went through the heat of COVID and March and so on. And we realized our business just wasn't the same. Mm. There wasn't the same energy. There wasn't the same collaboration. And we lost a lot of what made us us. And so we had to make the decision for everybody to come back into the office. And you have a couple different things. You have people that got really comfortable working from home. You have people that still, COVID was still around. So they were wondering, you know, how do we do this in a safe way, and scared from that perspective. But what we really did is made sure people knew the why we were making the decision. And we constantly weigh what's best for our people, what's best for our clients, and what's best for our company. It's the three legs of the stool, and all of those have to be an equal part. And when we weighed those options, we ultimately came to the fact that we should come back in the office for at least certain days a week and maintain a hybrid work environment. And it was not a popular decision. And frankly, we probably lost a couple people. But ultimately, it was funny to see, after knowing it's the right decision and communicating it in the best way possible. And one thing I left out is making sure we took all the safety precautions that we needed to take, because that is legitimate. We would not want to risk the health of the individuals in our company. But after doing that, what was interesting to see is people were like, you know, I was so against this, but man, it's so nice to be talking to people again and seeing people every day. Like, the people that were so upset about it were the same ones that really appreciated it. And our business started to improve. We offered a better service to our clients because of that. And then that caused growth for individuals. But it was not a popular decision. It was a big risk.
Yeah. I mean, that was such an on edge period for everybody for so long. And it was such a polarizing topic, and who can survive what. And it ends up being a culture question. What is the culture of the organization, and how does the work from home, work from office, partial this, hybrid that, because it's going to impact the culture. It's going to impact the performance in one way, shape, or another. So where's the priority and what's sustainable? And at some point, a decision is going to have to be made, and you'll never get consensus.
Never.
That's the hardest part. There's no consensus. So being able to articulate the decisions, to your point, clarifying the why and ensuring people of the steps that would be taken, of course, to protect everybody's safety, which is paramount. But in order to move forward, what's necessary, and knowing that there'll be people who say, I'm not okay with this and I'm going to go elsewhere, and having to be okay with that, understanding that that's a possible side effect of the decisions. But it sounds like it all worked out, and the people who stayed are the ones who needed to stay.
Absolutely. And you'd never want to lose anybody. And I can't even remember exactly who left or who didn't, but I know there was a few. And ultimately, you have to continue to do what's best for the whole. And those conversations are never easy.
Right.
They never get any easier over time. You can just do them better. And I think that's the thing we're always trying to do. That wasn't our last tough risk or decision we'll have to make. Just continuing to learn from each one and trying to improve.
And that's such a great way to put it. It's never going to get easier. You can just handle them better. I think that's words to and from the wise, for that matter. So everybody, I'm repeating that one more time. These big decisions never get easier. You just hopefully learn to do them better. So on that note, Eric, I want to invite you to our Listener 24-Hour Influence Challenge. And this is an opportunity for you to challenge our listeners to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence. How would you like to challenge our listeners today?
What I would like to do is have everybody write down on a piece of paper, find a piece of paper, not a phone, not a laptop, old school, get yourself a nice pen and a piece of paper, and write down five conversations that you know you need to have, but for whatever reason, they don't sound very fun and you're not looking forward to them. The longer you've been avoiding them, the better, the more they belong on this list. Then I want you to circle the one that stands out above the rest, that's causing you the most stress, most heartache. And I want you in the next 24 hours to go have that conversation. You have my permission to mess it up and do terrible. Just have the conversation. And I think what you will find is after you have that conversation, it won't be as bad as you thought it would be, and it will relieve a ton of stress for you. So just use this. You've been avoiding it. Stop avoiding it. Have the conversation. I always say the worst way to have a tough conversation is not to have it at all. Just having it, you will feel so much better.
Yes. Festering is definitely not something. I heard a great phrase years ago. I don't remember where I heard it from, but that holding a grudge is like swallowing poison and waiting for the other person to die.
I like that. That makes a ton of sense.
it builds and builds and builds and festers. And gosh, it's like, if I just pulled the trigger so much longer ago, we could have had this done. So yeah, I think that's terrific. And to anybody out there who's listening, you'll go, well, but you know what? I'm really busy tomorrow. There's no way I'll have time to do this. You do have time to shoot them a text message or an email or something and just invite them to have the conversation and find a time that is mutually convenient for both of you. So there's no get out of jail free cards. This is not my first rodeo. No, you're not off the hook on this one. So you will follow Eric's 24-hour challenge and make your lives better in the long run. I love it. Thank you for that, Eric. Okay. Tell me about a communication skill that you weren't born with and had to learn. How'd you learn it?
I would go with public speaking. I know this is a common one for a lot of people. I think if people see me speak in public or on the podcast or whatever, and they say, oh, you're such a natural. It's so easy for you. I wish I could public speak like that. And I think there's a small percentage of the public that, sure, they got lucky and they have no stress or anxiety going into those. But that was not me. And this was not something that I would say I had a God-given talent at that. I would say my relationship with public speaking is similar to running a mile. Before I run it, I dread it. I don't really want to do it. When I start it, it's about as painful as I thought it would be. But then at some point, it starts to feel really good. And when you're done, it feels great. So it's definitely a love-hate relationship with it. But I would say that's the skill that I've had to work on the most.
It's something that everybody has to work on, because even if you don't have the fear necessarily, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily awesome at it either. So everybody should be working on taking whatever raw talent they've got and honing it, to say the least. And most people wouldn't believe it, but if you ask my mother, she will tell you that when I was little, I was super shy. I didn't want anybody to look at me. I would hide behind her if you try to talk to me in the supermarket or whatever it was. So I don't know what happened somewhere in the middle. Life changes. But apparently it was not something that I was born with either. All right, Eric. What about going to bat for somebody else? Have you ever had to do that?
Yeah, I feel like this comes up a lot. We have at our company what we call a mobility culture. So we really believe in using our leaders in a variety of different positions throughout their path so they can learn different departments, different functions. And ultimately, when they move up to the highest role that they have since the time they're here, they have all that experience in the other areas to help them be successful. So oftentimes, I find myself in conversations where we are talking about individuals for a potential role. And what I have learned over the time is typically it takes a lot less courage to say that someone's not going to be successful in a role than it is that somebody is going to be successful. So typically the conversation starts and goes around about all the things of why this person may not be successful. Or, I don't think they'd be the best fit for this position because of this, this, and this. And one technique that's worked for me in just my head alone, but then also communicating with other people is, okay, I know that person may not be organized. I know that person may have struggled with this specific function, but what are they really good at? Let's say they were still successful in spite of those things. Why would they be really successful? And just asking that question can sort of change the tone of the conversation. And I'm not saying you should be blind to it, but I think sometimes you make better selections when you focus on where people are strong and making sure that their strengths match up with the role. Then you're worried about all the different areas where they may be deficient.
Absolutely. And it reminds me a lot of, even when we're in your situation, that person's not even in the room. Their name is being weighed or considered for a possibility. But when we are talking to somebody and giving them feedback, we all know on so many levels why it's valuable to give positive feedback first. What's something they did well? And then we could talk about something that they could do to make it even better at that point and to further strengthen and develop. But even when we're talking about other people rather than to other people, I think it's such a healthy and positive mindset, even for ourselves as the talkers, to start by remembering this person's greatest strengths. What are things that they do well? What is valuable? What value do they add? Where could they be successful? What potential do they have? Keeping that at front of mind first, and then going from there into, okay, what might a roadblock or what challenges might they experience or what might they need to fill in to be ready for some other opportunity? But to go in with that positive bit first, as opposed to the original, well, okay, are they ready for this? Well, probably not, because here's all the things they're missing. Nobody's ever 100% ready, to your earlier point,
right,
to just jump into a new position and be 100% successful right away. That's the learning curve. the whole point is you promote somebody into a job that in part they're going to grow into, that keeps them there for a while. That's the development opportunity. If you're not, if you're just promoting them into something where they're already ready for it, well, why aren't they doing it? And aren't they going to get bored pretty fast when there's nowhere for them to go?
It's a great point.
So I think that's terrific. Starting with that positive focus. So what a difference in culture that must make. Can you imagine if the entire organization started conversations that way?
You know, the other hidden benefit of this is oftentimes when you talk about their weaknesses and say you're talking about a specific role and there's some legitimate reasons of why they shouldn't play that role. When you actually talk about their strengths, what you tend to do is you tend to find the right spot for them in the organization. And it may not be the one you're talking about, but you know what? What about this role over here? And I'd be lying if I said we did it or I do it all the time, but it is something that I need to continue to keep top of mind because I think it makes a huge difference.
I think it's something we all should be doing more often, regardless of the size, just starting with that. What's effective? What's working well? Where are they successful? Boy, what a difference that would make in the world if everybody had those conversations. That's my 24-hour influence challenge for everybody else out there. Tomorrow and from then on, start with the positive, even talking to yourself. What is this person doing well? Then go from there and consider other opportunities. Here's my challenge for you, Eric. Finish this sentence. I wish I was better at explaining what to whom.
I wish I was better at explaining why I should be able to golf every weekend to my wife.
Okay. Now tell me why that's hard.
Well, she doesn't play golf and she doesn't understand the joy and calm and peace. I'm not even any good at golf, but I do enjoy to play. And it's a mix of, I'm not really a nature person, but I like being outside. So it's my perfect, and I'm competitive. So it's a perfect mix of activities. It's just such a beautiful sport. And she doesn't appreciate my golfing habit at times.
Golf is one of those sports where it can be fun, but it's not like tennis where you can go for an hour or two and then kind of come back.
It's a long day.
It sucks up your entire day, really, by the time you get there, set up, play the 18 holes and come back. And I only know this from watching because heaven knows I have swung a club. I don't think you can call what I do playing golf. I think that would be a stretch of the imagination.
You'd like it. You'd be great at it.
Maybe in the long run. Again, I have swung the club and so far evidence would prove to the contrary.
Okay.
But I appreciate the benefit of the doubt, Eric. So maybe you can teach me.
Starting with your strengths.
Starting with the strengths. Right. Yeah. Right. You have the potential, all right. You play other sports. So that's awesome. All right. Finally, tell me about a time when you had to laugh at yourself.
So when I had to laugh at myself, man, just about every day. There was one time where, so I do new hire trainings. Every new hire class that comes on, I meet with them and give them my spiel and give them some advice on how to be successful here and ultimately learn more about them. And there was one time where it was like right after I had COVID and there was just a lot of unfortunate situations, but I literally just froze up and forgot what I was going to tell them and what I was going to talk about. And it's one of those things where you can get in your head about it or you can just remember that you've done this hundreds of times and it was a one situation thing. But that was, yeah, it's a big deal. And I think that's the thing I've found so far in my short career is that things just ebb and flow. And everything you do in a day is not going to feel as comfortable or as good as it did yesterday. But then tomorrow, it might feel even better than it's ever have. And you just have to embrace it and stay present in what you're doing.
100%. That's terrific. Thank you so much for being on our show today, Eric. How can people learn more about you and Abstract Marketing?
Yeah, so you can visit our website. It's abstractmg.com, spelt with a K. You'll see it in the link here. And then you can visit me on LinkedIn. Follow me at Eric Watkins, Abstract Marketing Group. And I'm sharing content from our podcast that we do. And that'd be the last thing. The signs over my head here is the Grow Show. So we run a podcast with myself, our CEO, and our Chief Revenue Officer, where we're giving advice on how to run a business and how to run it successfully from zero to $50 million. And I know there's a lot of business owners out there, but it's also for young professionals that are trying to advance in their career. And I talk about some of the things that have helped me advance over my time in my career.
Amazing. So everybody else out there, once you're done listening to these episodes each week, go there and your second podcast of the week will be The Grow Show. Build your business, build your career. I assume that's available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all the usual suspect platforms.
Absolutely. And if you're looking to grow your business at abstractmg.com, we have all the information on our services and everything else. We'd love to, any B2B business, we'd love to be an opportunity of growing you from zero to 50 million or 50 million to a billion.
Love it. Thank you so much for joining us today, Eric. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much, Laura.
And to everybody else out there, thank you, as always, for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe if you have not done so yet so that you never miss an episode. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts so we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And finally, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.